Hey everyone, before we get to the next episode and guest, I want to acknowledge and thank everyone for helping my new book, Game Time Decision Making, a number one new release. Game Time Decision Making, like the playbook, will help you figure out how to make those critical decisions to be more productive and accessible to others. Game Time Decision Making not only deals with the decision making process, but also the assumptions we make to get there. And so to continue your support, I have one ask. Either order the book from Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, or contact me directly, or share one with a friend. Once again, I appreciate all of your support for the playbook and for game time decision making. Let's join our guest on our next episode. How many of you out there want to get a job in sports or want to accelerate your sports career? Well, this is the episode to listen to. I have the dual COOs of AEG, Nick Baker and Russ Silvers. This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer. This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs the Playbook, and I have a double dose COO. This has never been happened before. Two COOs of AEG, and we have Nick Baker and Russell Silvers, plural. Now let's just start with, what is it like? This is my biggest question as an entrepreneur. Rarely do we have two chief operating officers. How do you guys coordinate what your roles and responsibilities are?
Well, first of all, thankfully, we're great friends. So
I can tell that.
We've grown up together at this company. We've been, I think Russ is at 17 years and I'm at 15. Yep. So it helps that we enjoy each other's company a lot and we complement each other a lot. So our division, the Global Partnerships Division, is responsible for producing, generating all the revenue for our sponsorship and our premium seating across the world and our portfolio. And the team that I'm day-to-day with is our sales team, generating new partnerships. Russell and his team are really doing the harder work, which is activating the deals once they're done.
Nice. And do you each give each other credit for who has the harder job?
No, they're both very difficult. But you know, to Nick's point, we've grown up here together. We're great friends. Families know each other. We both have young kids, so we've kind of gone through this journey of life together. And I say this only, I've only said this about my wife, but you know, our each other's strengths, maybe the other one's weaknesses. So we complement each other in ways that not only do we learn from the industry, and there's so many innovative people that we get to deal with on a daily basis, but you know, I learn from my business partner every day as well. So being able to have that camaraderie, the competitive nature that we both have, but the friendship on top of that, it kind of drives us to always be better, but do it in a way that's positive and organic. And it's I've never felt in all the years we've worked together that it's ever been pressed or.
I think that's helped our vibe with our team too, right?
Right.
It's both sides, very similar to football, offense and defense. And I think we also now with data and analytics have our special teams. So for us, it's important that from kind of the top down, it's clear that both sides have equal importance, different roles and different positions, but equal importance. And so our communication to each other hopefully resonates down to the rest of the team that sales and activation need to work, you know, hand in hand.
It's so interesting that you brought up the strengths and weaknesses, because I'm on this journey of teaching people that all strengths put into a different place are weaknesses.
Yeah.
And all weaknesses, if you move them to another place, are strengths. And you know, being married myself for 21 years, I always tell people that's the blessing, is that all the stuff that I realized annoyed me about my wife was the stuff I needed in my life.
Yeah.
Right? And I think I see that between the two of you. If you don't mind me asking, I'll start. Russell, what's his biggest weakness that you kind of fulfill?
Oh, geez, the biggest weakness.
Great question.
Sorry. I'm going for him.
We joke about patience. Sometimes when we're in meetings, Nick is he's very dialed in on doing deals. Obviously, Nick is I believe he's one of the best in the business doing it. So there's a lot of times where implementations, if they're not going well on his side of the business, at times it could frustrate him more than it might me. So sometimes I'll try to help out and pave the way a little bit more in that regard. And I'll take the few minutes where, you know, some of that may not be something he wants to deal with.
sounds like you and I are exactly the
same. It's totally true, by the way. That's right? Totally true.
Well, that illumination is great, but now how about reverse the question?
It's funny. I think it's probably a compliment, but at times Russell's too nice. Yeah. So maybe that goes along with the too patient, too nice. But I don't think he has any weaknesses, really. If anything, he's too nice.
And so you guys have family relationships, business relationships, years go by, a lot of people, you know, Warren Moon and I are business partners, have a similar type of background together, except for we look more alike than you two.
Right, and one of them is in the Hall of Fame. Yeah,
you know, we have like 10 Pro Bowls between the two of
right,
us.
Right.
It's amazing. Anyway, it's just like, but you know, working together is like a marriage, except for it's, you know, harder to get divorced, I think, when you have a true partnership, you know, because there's so many financial obligations that other people probably don't even realize. What's the most difficult part about being that close to somebody that you work with and rely on?
Oh man, that's a great question. You know, I think that at times, or you know, I give Nick my greatest compliment I can give Nick is his positive attitude. He is a man that every day, even if something is bad, he will try to find the true good in all things. That is not me. Like, I am the first one if things are going bad. I mean, I'm almost the opposite. So he has to like lift me up. So there's times where it's tough to compliment his energy because it's so high all the time. So
that's what my wife says too.
Yeah. So you know,
we could never be partners. We kill each other. Right, the exact same thing.
It's why it works.
But yeah, I would say time is a challenge, right? Because we've got thankfully a lot to do, and sometimes time can be a challenge in terms of what are we going to do today and right now to get done. That's the most important in setting those priorities. Making good decisions in terms of where you spend your time is sometimes a challenge.
And yeah.
And you both grew up like, you know, with successful families and, you know, grew up, but you had to work your way up in this business, you know, and a lot of people, I always say there's two ways to make it in the sports industry, which is a multi-billion dollar industry. It's either work your way up in another industry and move laterally over with the skills, knowledge, and desire that you have for sports, or like both of you have done, you know, start at the bottom.
Yeah.
And even if you have family relationships, you're still at the bottom, you know, and you still have to prove. In fact, I think sometimes I worry about taking my own kids or my nephew and bringing them into the business, or even worse, my daughter's boyfriends and bringing them into the business, because they actually have it a lot tougher.
Yeah, I would listen. I think one of the coolest things, if not the coolest thing about this industry, and it's the only one I've ever been in, is how strong the relationships are. And there's a bond with a lot of people in this industry. Many who are much higher than I am, because they all started at the same place. You know, most people were in a cubicle selling, you know, group tickets or individual tickets, or they were an intern or whatever it may be. So there's this shared bond, I feel like, that everyone understands that you had to work your way up, and there's some legitimacy to that. That's not to say that there aren't very talented people who come, you know, cross category, but I think there's a shared sense of respect that's the best way to not only start, but learn. You know, I learned the most when I was younger from other people above us who gave us direction to do things, and that was very valuable.
Yeah, I mean, I was selling $10 tickets to events of ours and $5,000 booth space at festivals, spaces, and it was, I learned so much. I got to learn things on the broadcast side of the business, the ticket side, group tickets, marketing, sponsorship, you name it. And there's such a wealth of knowledge that you learn at the kind of, you know, in the inception of this career. The one thing that really enticed me was when I saw the sponsorship side of the business, I realized the revenue that could be generated in that division. That really was something that attracted to me. So when I did not know what I wanted to do when I first came into the sports industry. I mean, to me, it was the baptism by fire, and I was just thrown in. And once I found out what I wanted to do, I put all my eggs in that basket, and I went, you know, put my head down and went toward, you know, the global partnerships division. And I moved everything else that I had been working on aside and really focused on sitting down with the people that were the leaders in the industry in the sports or in the sponsorship world, and really trying to learn from them. And that, you know, took it from the ground floor up.
Yeah, we always joke, Todd Goldstein, our chief revenue officer, he's on the board, directors for AAG. When he was working for the Denver Nuggets, there were times when he would put on the mascot uniform.
Right.
I mean, like, you would do anything and everything to help put on a live event and deliver great value for the fans that were there and the partners that are associated with that. And live events really haven't changed much, you know, in that respect. You still want to put on a great live event product. You want the fans to have an incredible, safe time. You want the brands that are associated with it to be able to amplify their message. And if you stay true to that, I mean, a lot of those principles are still,
It's awesome. You know, I love sponsorship because I realize one thing, that to get into sports, anyone that can sell a sponsorship can immediately be in sports because you don't even have to own the inventory, right? What I've learned is, you know, you could not even work for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but find the $100 million Johnson Control relationship come to the Hall of Fame and say, hey, if I bring a $100 million naming right client to you, how much will you pay me?
Right.
And that business always exists. But I think it's important for younger people who want to work in sports to get advice about what you've learned by working 15 and 17 years up the ladder with internally. You know, what's that number one lesson? We'll start with you, Nick, that you would give as advice if I'm graduating from college, business school, or law school and say, hey, you know, I want to work for AG or for some team. What advice would you give me as far as being successful in your career?
Yeah, the one thing I think that we as a society jump to too quickly is, what am I going to be doing in 15 years? What's my legacy? Those are big words to think about, especially when you're coming out of college. So think about the first step you're going to take. Are you going to go somewhere where you have passion and you can add, you know, your contributions and learn from people that are there? I think that is a great first step. You know, good ownership structure. If it's an event or a team or a sport that you love and you can add value and you can work hard there, go do it, right? And then from there, what you're going to do is create relationships, and those relationships will probably take your career on an interesting path. But I think it's a little aggressive to be considering what your life will be like 15, 20 years from now.
Don't linear point of entry.
Yeah, and I think people are just too dramatic with what their, you know, aspirations are at times. Just get to work.
Nice. Yeah, I would. The only thing I'd piggyback on that is, you know, we sit down with folks that, you know, are coming out of college and they want to get into the industry. It's evolved a lot in the last 20, 25 years, you know, since we really kind of got into the space. And you see people nowadays, they don't know what they want to do in the industry. And we can't give them that narrative. They have to figure that out themselves. So when you're sitting down and you say, why the sports and entertainment industry? Because it's weekends, it's holidays, and it's nights. It's not the sexiest, most glamorous, you know, times to work. Why do you want to get into it? You know, you need to have, one, a compelling answer to that. But then, two, you have to understand what you want to get into. Kind of our sidebar chat, you know, earlier was, you know, do you want to go into PR? Do you want to go into marketing, ticket sales, sponsorships? There's so much. And you need to know where your strengths and where your weaknesses lie to be able to forge your own path in the industry. We can't do that for you. You only know that yourself. And I feel like that's still that rub where, you know, young kids out of college, that I don't know if they know that yet. And that's kind of what they need to figure out.
And I found there's one other nuance in the industry of sports that has made it difficult. I'm going to steal this from you, Nick. So when you watch future podcasts and me on the on content, but I love the idea of there's always been the offense and defense side of the business, but there is this new special teams.
Totally.
And it's an entire multi-billion dollar industry that none of us, right? I'm the old guy on Instagram that gets this, but you know, anyone that tells you they get the special teams and they can guarantee, and I've been up to Instagram, to YouTube, to Facebook, even the people who work internally, they don't know as much about the offense and the defense as we know comparatively of the special teams. And then you add esports, right?
Dude, it's an investor in Splice, right?
And I'm sitting there, it's probably the best investment I've made in the last 2 years is owning that Splice team, right? The valuation wise.
But you probably don't know everything about it.
Well, I have to go, and it's almost embarrassing because people want to interview me, and I don't like, at a younger age, I love to talk out of here.
Right.
Now I refuse to. So to sit there and say, look, I'm guessing. Right? I don't even know where this could go or how it could go. I have no idea why the valuation is where it's at, other than so many people enjoy it. How do you guys deal, and I'll start Nick back here because you came up with the special team term that I'm steal. But like, this is a huge organization and you guys run a huge business unit. You know, how do you deal with that unknown variable of the special teams of digital marketing and media and content?
Well, we're focused on finding great people. I mean, the best ingredients to our success is our portfolio, which our owner and our board of directors has created. We have a very powerful global portfolio, and then our people. So for us, when you talk about special teams, we are not experts in special teams, but we have hired people that we think are experts in that. And we believe in their knowledge of it. And we also know what we don't know, and we know we don't know everything. And I think sometimes people are afraid to say, hey, I don't know everything on this topic, or what I believe is the perfect strategy. That's not our mentality, nor can it be, because we own so many different things and are selling across so many different platforms that there's never one answer for what we're trying to do.
And Russell, you're more conservative and business practice oriented from what I take. I personally think the reason that I'm more successful with the special teams is I take the traditional approach and then realize, okay, here's the traditional side. What the special teams does is amplify and perpetuate real business, right? I don't make up vapor business. And I think people get caught up into how many followers they have, or right? I look for serious engagement as far as buying and selling and revenue. And you know, that's what I do. Where do you see that combination of, okay, there are some traditional principles that you have to apply to the special teams?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just want to piggyback one thing that Nick said, and it's so true to the business of our the success of our business is we're smart enough to know what we don't know. And the greatest assets that we have are employees.
We're not very smart, by the way.
Me neither. Yeah. So we got three geniuses
right.
here.
We're three geniuses talking right now. So over the last few years, we've sat down and looked at kind of those variables that you're talking about, these kind of the special teams, and what's important, what's going to drive the needle, and amplify the brands for our partners moving forward. And it's augmented reality. It's digital. It's social. It's analytics. All the things that, you know, 15, 20 years ago, we're not on the forefront of in the sports or in the sponsorship world. So we realized that was a deficiency within our group, and we wanted to bring in the best and the brightest in those areas and learn from them. So even though there's a responsibility of running kind of the operations of the entire group that we have on our shoulders, we have a lot of autonomy to team to run their respective verticals and have all the power and the say over that. Now, obviously, there are things we need to, you know, catch along the way, but we learn from them, and that journey is so cool to watch because we have a studios group, we have a digital team that have grown exponentially over the last few years, probably more than we even thought it was going to grow. So we've taken that gamble, and it's worked out, and we're going to continue doing that because we want to research areas that we know that maybe we might not be as strong in. So. We lean a lot on our employees to do that.
And last question, and goes to your guys' core competency, which is great content. So when I think of AAG, the idea of it is there's always this great live content. Now you have an additional business of capturing the live content, amplifying the live content, perpetuating. In each of those stages, you can sell sponsorship.
Totally.
And you have a 4 billion person reach now to every event that goes on in your facilities and in your events,
yeah.
Right? And it's extraordinary. And I don't think all three of us combined really right. even can grasp the potential that we have in the next 30 years.
Yeah.
Right, when you guys come back on the show, and we'll find out. But you know, thinking about that, I believe that it's still content driven, right? When you have the best content, that allows you to fill up an arena. That's why esports can fill up an arena now. You know, the Lakers, even when they don't win, they fill up the arena.
Yep.
Because it's great content.
Yep.
How do you guys determine, you know, the live side of it, which I think is the most important side of why you're successful, is determining that content and then figuring out how to monetize it. How do you guys do that?
Well, I mean, we've got a couple different sectors of content. You know, we've got our sports teams. So right, the play of our sports teams is incredibly important. And thankfully, we've got people that are in place to find the best players to play those games. But there's also a live experience that takes place during those games that it's kind of its own show within the show. We probably have a little bit more control over that, and you want both of those to be great. Same could be said for a music festival, right? Our group is not responsible for booking the talent that's there, but in terms of some of the activations and enhancements that a brand could make to those festivals, or a facility for that matter, help enhance that. Same with, from a digital perspective, some of the programs that our brands put in place make the experience better. And it sounds like it's just a manufactured quote or something you would say on a panel, but we genuinely try to find brands that make the live experience better for us and for our fans. And
yeah, your activation sometimes can actually outweigh and outperform some of the live content that exists. You know, I've been to events where I'm like, man, this is a killer activation from this company, and you're getting paid to do it.
Oh, no Absolutely. Doubt. I mean, we were just at, you know, Coachella. We have a global relationship with Marriott, and Marriott puts on just an unbelievable activation that can be redeemed on their Bonvoy rewards platform. And touring where fans, guests can redeem their points and be for the weekend, you forget that that's just where they're staying. There's actually Coachella taking place
right
around the corner. But you realize that there has been an event within the event created that's pretty powerful.
I hate to always make you the piggybacker. Is there anything you can piggyback onto that as far as?
No, I mean, it's how do you create a sponsorship platform that exceeds that of the actual event in and of itself? How can you create such an amplification where fans and festival goers are leaving the event and they're actually talking about an activation? They're talking about a sponsorship on top of that of like how cool the event experience was. And you know, I think that, you know, if we strive to do that all the time, then we'll be successful and we're going to continue growing our revenues because partners are going to, we have the opportunity, the platform to be able to amplify the brands. But how much can we push that envelope and how cool of activations can we put together to really create that memory, that lasting memory? The one thing I would say is that, we're not in the ticket-taking business. We really are in the experiential business. So long as we as an organization continue to feel that way, yes, we want butts in seats, but at the end of the day, we want to create that long-lasting experience for people to come back over and over again. With the climate in Los Angeles and how competitive it's become over the last few years with new teams and stadiums and so on and so forth, how can we differentiate ourselves from everyone else? And it really is what we have in our own backyard and, you know, with the content we can push through our venues, our entertainment districts, and with our partners. So we can do that, then, you know, we have a good runway ahead of us.
I love this playbook because I think there's two big lessons just listening to you young executives of this great company is, one, just humility, which I love to see in younger executives is how far humility can go between two people as well as an entire organization. And then also, this playbook just reeks of value. You know, from your answer sitting on this side listening, it's like every answer was determined upon like what value are you personally providing to your team and to the company, but even moreover, what values the company. And you made a great point. I don't know, I get to travel the entire world in sports, and I don't know within, you know, 100-mile radius, more new stadiums.
Yeah.
Which, right. You know, these are billion-dollar facilities, yep. But I mean, between
LSU
soccer and
market,
football,
yeah.
like the things going on here are extraordinary, and you guys just continually be at the top of the game, and I can see why now after interviewing both of you. So I appreciate you both coming on the playbook. We got to do this again.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got Nick Baker and Russell Silvers with Dave Meltzer here on Entrepreneurs, The Playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.